British Sky Broadcasting presents a Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer film entitled Across 110th Street, starring Anthony Quinn as Captain Frank Martelli and Yaphet Kotto as Lieutenant Pope. Also starring Anthony Franciesa as Nick DiSalvio, with Paul Benjamin, Ed Bernard, Richard Ward and Norma Donaldson. The director is Barry Shear and the screenwriter Luther Davis from a novel by Willie Ferris. The songs are composed and performed by Bobby Womack, voiced by Tony Cook on behalf of the MCS agency. A sleek black Cadillac cruises through the busy streets of New York. On the front passenger seat next to the driver rests a metal case. Another man sits in the back seat. The car bears right at a road sign which says, Across 110th Street. Brother of five, doing whatever I had to do to survive. I'm not saying what I did was all right, trying to break out of the ghetto from the day-to-day fight. Been down so long, getting rough and cross my mind, but I knew there was a better way of life and I was just trying to find. You don't know what you'll do until you put under pressure. Across 110th Street is a hell of a tester. I've got the 110th Street.
Catch hell, but if I don't get around, in every city you find the same thing going down. Harlem is the capital of any ghetto town.
The car turns into a litter-strewn street in the Harlem District, the residential area occupied mostly by African Americans. It comes to a halt outside a tenement block of apartments. A man wearing a dark suit and highly polished shoes gets from the back seat. He walks with the aid of a crutch. The driver, holding the metal case, joins him. They cross the pavement and climb steps leading into the apartment block. In one of the upstairs rooms, three men are gathered around a table. Wads of banknotes are being emptied from bags onto the table.
That's them.
The two men from the car are let into the room.
We had an okay week.
Why wouldn't we?
The smartly dressed man takes off his trilby hat and overcoat and passes them on to his driver, who hands them on to one of the other men.
Good Monday stuff together.
The driver opens the case on the table. The smartly dressed man puts on horn-rimmed spectacles and taps into a calculator.
All right, gentlemen, let's go.
They start counting the money.
$5.75. $5.95.
First one's 25th of St. Nicholas. Second, 25th of May.
As the notes are counted, wads of them are thrown into the case.
$623.
They fold the tablecloth over the money.
Is there anybody in there driving a 68 caddy? It's two cops.
All right, give the assholes a couple of dollars. Give them $20.
Everybody back against the window.
Hey, cops! What the hell's going on?
Hey, man, I know him. That's Jim Harris.
Where's your gun?
I don't have any.
What's up, man?
What the hell does it look like, you dumb son of a bitch? Up with those hands.
Thought you were still in the joint.
Harris, you think you can jive your way in here and just take some money?
Shut it.
One of the men posing as cops points a machine gun. In the street outside, the getaway driver sits nervously in a black sedan car revving the engine. With sweat pouring down his face, he glances up to the window of the apartment where his colleagues are staging the robbery. The blinds are down on the window. Inside, the men who are counting the money stand stiffly with their hands in the air, having placed their handguns on the table. The police imposter with the machine gun nods to his uniform colleague, who starts loading the banknotes into the metal case with a smile on his lips. The case becomes unbalanced and falls to the floor. One of the captives seizes the opportunity of distraction to make a grab for one of the guns on the table, despite a frenzied warning from the man in horn-rimmed spectacles. All five members of the mafia gang are gunned down. One of the bodies lies slumped through a smashed windowpane, dripping with blood. Some of the banknotes are bloodstained. The two fake cops survey the carnage, traumatized by what has happened. Outside, the getaway driver anxiously glances around, fear etched on his face. The robber who fired the bullet, Jim Harris, gathers his wits and grabs his shocked accomplice, Joe Logart, who is mesmerized by the sight of so many corpses. They frantically start filling the case with the money. As he handles the notes, Joe continues to stare in horror at the dead men. When the case is full, Jim grabs him by the shoulder. As they dash down the stairs, Joe holding the case is sick.
Joe, you all right?
I'm all right.
Come on. You can't crap out on me now.
Outside, they race to the waiting car. A real uniformed cop confronts them, gun in hand.
What the hell is going on?
Joe Logart fires his handgun and Jim Harris the machine gun. The cop dies in a hail of bullets.
Drive, man. Drive.
What happened up there?
The driver, Henry J. Jackson, finds the narrow street blocked by a truck coming towards him. The truck waits and Jackson tries a three-point turn, ramming a parked car in the process. After turning, there's a near collision with a car at a road junction. Jackson mounts the pavement to avoid a crash. As he gets back on the road, a lorry has to brake hard. Then the car stalls.
The matter, come. Henry, can't you drive
this? Hey, man, the thing is stalled,
well,
man!
Then move it, get it quick!
Come on,
quick! Get out of here, man!
Come on!
Hey, Jim, come on!
A policeman is running towards them.
Drive!
The officer fires at the car. They drive into him. His hat cascades along the road in the wake of the vehicle. A family party to say farewell to the head of the family who's off on a world cruise. It's a special family, the New York Mafia and relatives. Waiters in pristine uniforms serve drinks and food. A poster says Bon Voyage. A suave-looking man holding his young son introduces the boy to an older, slightly built, balding man.
Yeah, that's it. You remember Grandpa? He gave you the bicycle last Christmas.
Come on, come on.
Huh? So cute. You want to hold him, Grandpa?
Mickey,
what?
You remember my Uncle Charlie?
Who?
Charlie.
Uncle Charlie, hey, it's good to see you.
The older balding man, now holding his grandson, is being given information in hushed whispers by two men in suits. They treat him respectfully. His face shows he doesn't like what he's hearing. The suave man, Nick DeSalvio, now with another child in his arms, is given instructions by one of the besuited men.
Hey, Teresa, take the kids. God, they're always running out of the hall.
He takes the two children over to his wife. The men can now talk freely, and they continue their hushed conversation. DeSalvio nervously stares across the room at them, dabbing sweat from his forehead with a folded handkerchief. All three look at him as if a decision involving him has been made. The older man steps towards DeSalvio, who joined the family by marrying his daughter. He indicates that he wants a private word. DeSalvio nods in deference to his father-in-law's senior position in the family and with the mob. The older man saunters over to a window overlooking New York Central Park. He waits.
You get it for it, Grace. I'm busy. You get it. Hello, Dorothy. How are you? Good to see you.
Hi.
What is it? Nick. Look. What do you see? Central Park.
Central Park, see? But there's also no man's land that separates us from the black in armor.
Yeah.
Nick, today they took our bank in armor for over $300,000.
What?
They killed two of the family, two cops, and two of their own. Nick, ain't for the money, ain't for the man. But we have to teach them a lesson, or we lose all of them. If we lose all of them, we lose a lot more than the money. We lose all prestigio, l'onore. Nick, chi deve controllare Ugada, controllare città, maybe your stat. If they're trying to push us out of Harlem, we work too hard to get it. This may be your last chance. It may be mine to do something for you. Take care of yourself, Nick. They're rough, those niggas. All right? Now, Nick, say the truth. Can you handle it?
Yeah, sure, I can handle it. What? Yeah, sure you can, Nick, sure.
DeSalvio is mentally recalling the conversation as he sits pensively in the front passenger seat of a car. Another gangster sits in the back. An ambulance heads towards the tenement block where the shootings happened. It's nighttime. A crowd has gathered in the street outside, fascinated by the mass shootings and at the audacity to rob the mafia. Others watch the scene from their apartment windows. A police car turns up, its emergency lights flashing. A uniformed police officer opens the front passenger door and Captain Frank Metelli gets out.
Hi, Ben. I'm Tilly. It's been a real pitch. World War II.
So I heard. It's a real beaut, huh?
Yeah.
Where's Riley?
I don't know. The last time I saw him, he was on the ambulance.
1L81.
Riley!
Frank?
Why the hell wasn't I called before?
Come on, Frank. You were off duty. We got to you as soon as we could.
Okay. Brief me.
Seven dead.
Seven? I heard six.
Patrolman Hanratty on the way to the hospital. Doesn't stand a chance.
Anything else?
Right now, just bodies. Three white, four black. All dead.
Where were the boys hit?
Hanratty, about 30 yards down, about where that prowl car is. Patrolman Adams was coming around that corner.
What happened upstairs?
Yeah.
How's this car involved?
Checking the registration. It must have brought some of them here.
Hiya, Dick.
Captain.
You're your car?
Yeah, it's local.
Where's the brass?
Chief of Detectives is upstairs. Mayor's busy upstate. He's running for governor now. Commissioner's explaining to a convention in San Francisco how beautifully we do things here in New York. They both send their regards.
That's fine. That's great. Anything on the canvas?
Not a damn thing.
Nobody saw, nobody heard, huh?
No.
It figures.
The two detectives stride into the apartment block, past two uniformed officers posted at the entrance. As Captain Metelli goes upstairs, a body is being brought down, covered by a blanket on a stretcher. He lifts the blanket.
The dude they took out before was cut in two.
Metelli, a white man in his mid-50s, looks stony-faced. His eyes, trained to find clues, dart in all directions as he pauses in a dingy, wallpapered passageway upstairs. Two police officers who stand at the door of the room where the killings happened straighten up as the captain walks in. Other detectives and a forensic team are already in the room. A black detective peers through the window into the street below. A few wads of banknotes left behind are on the table. A police officer examines a bullet. Metelli snatches it from him and studies it himself.
They've been digging them out of the walls halfway down the block, Frank.
9 millimeters. Lots of them.
The captain takes more bullets wrapped in a handkerchief the officer is holding. He picks up a wad of notes and briefly examines the money. A police photographer is taking shots of one of the dead men.
Jimmy, take a few frontal shots. Hello, Frank.
Hiya, Charlie. Got yourself a handful, huh?
Things don't add up. Two whites, three blacks. How do you figure it?
What else brings whites to Harlem but business?
Metelli glances casually at the black detective who's crossed the room to examine a cracked mirror. He's holding his glasses away from his eyes, so they act as a magnifying glass. Metelli moves towards him.
Who are you?
You must be Captain Metelli.
That's right.
I'm Lieutenant William Ellsworth Pope. I'm in charge here.
Excuse me, what did you say?
I said I'm Lieutenant Pope. I'm in charge here.
Meaning what?
Meaning, Captain, I'm Lieutenant Pope. I'm in charge here.
Frank!
Hey, Jack.
Can I talk to you a minute?
Metelli nods. He's puzzled about Lieutenant Pope and joins the detective chief who leads him into the bathroom.
Well, we got the big brass, huh?
Come on in here a minute. I want to talk to you.
Yeah?
Shut the door. Yeah.
Hey, Jack.
Frank, this one's going to be a bitch. Downtown's afraid it's going to hit the fan.
Did you ever bring me in here to make a speech? What is it?
No, I didn't. You're not going to like it.
Well, come on, stop dancing around with it. Tell me.
Politicians feel that this other guy here should carry the ball.
Who?
Him, Dingy, the black guy.
Why, because he's black?
Because he's black, yeah.
Look, Jack, here in Harlem, he's going to get the same flag I do. He's still a cop.
That's so? What the hell do you care?
Look, is he going to stop a race right because he's black? Where was he last year? I stopped it myself. Just me, Jack. Just me.
Just politics, Frank. It doesn't have anything at all.
Scoop politics! Look, I'm not going to listen to any of this stuff about these guys.
You just got to get that through your head, Frank. It's his baby. Get that through your head.
Jack, you force this on me and I'll resign.
Frank. I'll give it to you straight. They like that. They're pushing out everybody over 50. How old are you?
Well, damn, I'm 55, just like you. What do we do now because we're 55? Eat shit?
I don't know, Frank. I made peace with my reality. You're gonna have to make it with yours.
Captain Frank Metelli stares grim-faced at his senior, as if he can't believe what he's hearing. He turns away and lowers his eyes deep in thought. He removes his hat and runs his fingers through his thinning hairline.
What's his name?
DeSalvier's car screeches into the underground car park of a limousine hire company.
Yes, I'm a bitch. We're in for trouble. The old man's son-in-law.
Hey, Nick! Where is it, Nick? Long time no see.
The owner, Doc Johnson, extends his hand, but DeSalvio ignores it.
Well, I want to talk to you.
DeSalvio and his two men march into Johnson's office, leaving Johnson and five of his hard men in the car park. Johnson and his top hard man, Chevy, follow uneasily. Johnson pours himself a drink and offers the bottle and a glass to DeSalvio, who declines with a brisk hand gesture.
You didn't have any guard downstairs? You didn't have a lookout? Huh?
15 years, we never been hit. We change apartments. We never used that one before. We thought we were okay.
You thought? Well, your ass must have been thinking, because now we're out $300,000. Do you hear me good?
Do you hear me good? We're out $300,000. Now, what do we do? Huh?
Look, I don't blame the old man for being mad. But anybody can get ripped off.
Hey, you and you work for us. All of us odds. We found it, we made it, and we're going to keep it. And this shit ain't ever going to happen again, you hear me?
They hold each other's gaze. Johnson takes a drink.
Who did it?
DeSalvio lights a cigarette.
Three black guys. Two dressed as policemen. I got a reward out for information. A grand. Chevy here's in charge.
A grand? What are you trying to do? You telling me that you really want to find these guys?
What are you talking about?
He shows all fingers on one hand.
$5,000.
Johnson turns to Chevy, who's standing behind him.
$5,000.
That's good. Now find them, but don't touch, they're mine. I'm going to teach these guys a few lessons.
God damn it, DeSalvio. I've been in charge here 15 years, and nobody tells me how to run my business.
Hey, your business is running our business. Do you understand that? You know, you may be a big shot around here up in Harlem, but below 110th Street, you're nothing but just a hired nigger, that's all.
DeSalvio's men look uneasy as the tension rises. Chevy narrows his eyes. Johnson feigns a smile.
It's not smart for 3 Dagos to run around killing brothers up here.
DeSalvio blows cigarette smoke into Johnson's face.
Fuck you and your brothers.
Johnson looks at him with disdain. DeSalvio leaves the office, followed cautiously by his two men. In the underground car park, where 4 of Johnson's gang linger, DeSalvio glances at his watch. He's about to get into the car.
Hey, DeSalvio!
Yeah?
You ain't never gonna make it, you know that? What are you, 40, 45 years old? You were a punk errand boy when you married the boss's daughter, and you're still a punk errand boy!
DeSalvio's eyes flash with anger.
No, Nick, no! All right.
Johnson laughs at him and Chevy joins in. An enraged DeSalvio is driven away. All the remaining men join in the laughter. Later, Chevy, a tall, flamboyantly dressed black man, calls into a bustling nightclub in Harlem with another of Johnson's gang. He's shown respect by the manager.
Hey, Chevy! Welcome to the 7-Eleven. What's your pleasure?
You still got a chick around here named Gloria Roberts?
Yeah, she's still here. Set up the drinks. Down there.
A woman hostess sitting at the bar is pointed out to him. He wanders over there and drags a man sitting to one side of her off his bar stool. He takes his place. The man she's talking to on the other side smells danger and makes a hasty retreat. His place is taken by Chevy's accomplice.
You know who I am?
Yes. I work for Papa Bear. I used to see you around.
You're in a position to see a whole lot of things. $100 for anything interesting. There's the number.
He leaves an address card with her. Chevy's accomplice puts his face close to hers.
Hello? You're losing all your baby fat. You looking good. It's the big hit today. That's it. The big hit. You looking real good. Next time we give a party, you gonna be there.
He pinches her cheek. She half-heartedly nods. As he leaves to follow Chevy, she looks on after him with a troubled brow. The man who made a hasty retreat reclaims his bar stool.
You got a gangster, but you need a pimp.
The TV news is on at the dry cleaner's shop as Logart arrives for work.
Broke into a Harlem apartment and gunned down 5 occupants.
God damn it, Joe. You couldn't come by here 2 minutes early, son. I couldn't.
Not that seriously.
The Adams, Timothy Hanratty. Cut down both men with machine gun fire. Officer Adams died instantly, multiple wounds, while Officer Hanratty passed away on the operating table early this
evening. How about that? A couple of idiots killed 2 more cops, and one of them is a brother. God damn.
Arriving at the murder scene, it is assumed that Mattelli, well known to Harlem residents, will handle the investigation.
Joe Locat's getaway driver, Henry J. Jackson, is getting ready for a night out. With a cigarette dangling from his mouth, he sprays his hair and dabs aftershave on his face and on his clothes. His body sways in time with the music as he puts on a brightly colored felt hat and a loud patchwork multicolored jacket. In his drab apartment, he stares at the mirror with a self-satisfied gaze of admiration, adjusting his collar and repositioning the hat. He can't wait to spend some of the money. He draws deeply on the joint he's smoking. In between puffs, he drinks from a can. An idea comes into his befuddled mind. He stares at the telephone resting on its cradle. He puts down the can and dials a number. At the dry cleaning shop, Joe Locat looks anxiously at the police uniform he's brought back to the dry cleaners hidden in a bed cover. He covers it as a customer walks in.
I've got a problem.
She holds up a pair of pants.
Damn. You got a problem? How does he feel?
He didn't have more at the time. Can you fix him?
Yeah. Hold it a minute. Himes Cleaners.
Joe, this is me. Is that you?
Hey, hold the phone, will you? Hey, look, the lady who fixes these is out. Why don't you bring them back in the morning and pick them up at night, okay?
She snatches back the torn pants and leaves looking disgruntled.
Hey, what's happening, man?
Hey, man, I just had to say, we did it, man. We did it!
Hey, look, you smoking?
Of course not. But we are on fire.
When Henry J. Jackson hangs up, Joe continues to look at his phone, perplexed. In his apartment, Jackson takes wads of notes from his hiding place in the fridge. He's excited about being able to spend it and deposits the banknotes in various pockets. He holds up one of the wads and kisses it. A mother holds the hand of two young children and leads them up the stairs in a run-down apartment block where the janitor is the third robber, Jim Harris. He answers the phone in the communal hallway.
Yeah.
Henry J. is getting hired up, man.
Son of a bitch.
Well, what are you gonna do?
Nothing. Stay loose.
Hey, Harris! The goddamn toilet's flushing into the sink again! Ain't you ever gonna fix it right?
I did what I can without a new valve.
What we gonna do tonight?
Why don't you call the owner in Mexico? He's usually there this time of the year.
The big police presence continues into the night at the scene of the shootings. From a balcony, a young boy drops a water bomb onto the head of a policeman. The cop looks shocked and wet. A colleague takes his arm.
You're lucky. I think it's water.
The law against withholding information. You know that, don't you? You could go to jail.
But I tell you, we had the radio.
You live directly across the street and over 100 rounds were fired.
Well, they play the radio loud.
Like he said,
Jesus Christ.
Sorry, officer, we can't be of more help. We didn't hear or see anything.
The detective strides away in disbelief.
Cool it, Jessup. That's a $100 bill, brother. And it'd be yours if you want it.
Chevy displays a $100 bill.
Honest man, work hard for $100.
I'm a brother asking for help and willing to pay. Go on, take it, Jessup, and let me in. Or you better never go out again.
I'm opening.
You know, you done real good not to say anything to the man.
The local police HQ, the 27th Precinct, is teeming with people. Mass interviews are being conducted.
I don't know a damn thing. I don't know nothing, man.
You mean you didn't hear a goddamn noise up there?
Most men don't rap much when I'm coughing their joint. You want to try me?
Hey, what kind of talk is that? Riley!
I don't know.
What the hell's going on?
He's hauling in a lot of
garbage.
Just came in for you, Captain. Male Caucasian, amount of time, armed robbery.
5-8.
We got a make on the getaway car. Checker sedan. 66, 67. Crumpled right fender. Painted black. A lot of rust spots.
Does the lieutenant have this?
No. Frank, I thought it'd be better if I...
Look, I appreciate what you're trying to
do. Frank, for Christ's sake, why let him take the credit?
Babe, this is his operation. But thanks.
You work for a living? The captain will be here shortly.
Hiya, Charlie.
When you got a minute.
What'd they bring you in for?
What do you mean? Sydney's here? They brought him in. All right. Mario, ma che fai qua?
Ma tu vigliacco, ma arrestato per niente!
Ma ti arrestato perché?
Per niente, cosa
fai? What's it, Charlie? Pochi cani per me!
È mio padre!
Ma che tuo padre?
Cognate, è mio padre!
Quante volte ti ho detto, eh?
No,
allora vai via! Let him go!
Hey, Chief, I gotta talk to you. Listen, I'm not taking any stuff. Like, they just dragged me in here because I was with my friends.
Really?
Yeah, and every time...
Okay, I'll take care of it.
Okay.
Honey, will you cover your tits? Come on.
Yes.
I told you, I warned you, no?
I'm lying, man. Listen.
Come here, you got any shit on you?
Hell no, man. Listen, I'm straight.
Come on, now, Charlie, can't you see that I'm busy now?
But nobody can.
All right, I'll take care of it. Okay. Just stay clean up. I'll take care of it, Charlie.
Harris Captain Metelli enters another room where Lieutenant Pope is interviewing.
Machine gun is going a block away and you didn't hear or see anything?
I didn't see or hear anything, man. You must be new around here, man.
How you doing, Lieutenant?
We're getting there.
That's good. How you sitting there?
How you doing?
Hey, Lieutenant, I've known this man for years. He's harmless. I'll vouch for him.
Go on,
Sidney. Charlie's hysterical.
No. No. Thank God.
Hope I know this punk. Can I be of any help?
No, thank you, Captain.
Chink, you and I have tangled before. You better answer this man's questions,
huh? Captain, please.
I'm just trying to help you both.
When Metelli raised a hand to scratch his head, Chink backed away as if he expected a beating.
At 3:47, more than 150 rounds of ammunition were fired into your apartment, which is about 200 yards away. A few moments later, another 50 to 75 rounds were fired in the street in a direct sight line from your newsstand. Two policemen were killed. Our car drove down the street and passed down there less than 10 feet from where you were. Turned to the right and went directly in front of you. And you're going to stand there and tell me you didn't see a goddamn thing.
Brother, I'd rather talk to you than that racist honky pig, man. Why won't you believe me, man? I'm telling you the truth.
Don't you give me any of that brother crap. I'm a police officer and I ask you a question. How is it possible for you to be deaf, dumb, and blind for 5 hours?
Look, I swear I didn't see anything.
Look, I'll quit. Give me both of you, buddy, if you don't answer this man's questions, you hear me? You better answer this man's questions, you understand?
Pope dragged Metelli off Chink.
Tell him I told him he didn't need to help in a minute.
Okay. We'll play it your way, Pope. What have you come up with, huh?
We're getting there.
Well, you are, huh? My boys came up with this.
Lieutenant Pope snatches from Metelli's hand the details of the black sedan getaway car.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Here, put out an all units on this. Goodbye, Captain.
As Metelli leaves, he pokes Chink in the stomach with his elbow, angering Pope. Henry J. Jackson is enjoying a naked romp in a bed with three ladies. He's flashing banknotes around, too.
Stop, Henry! Stop!
What?
Where'd you get all that?
Yeah. I won first prize in a beauty contest.
The nightclub hostess, Gloria, is off duty. She watches Jim Harris shove his money into a bag.
Crazy.
Crazy? Maybe. But we won, Gloria. We won.
He gets up from the bed they're sitting on in the apartment they share. She's glum-faced.
I didn't want to kill nobody. It wasn't in the plan.
Give it back.
He wraps the bag in his shirt.
I'd rather see you in jail than dead. If I could see you. They ain't executed nobody in 10 years. Get the mob off of your ass and give them back the money.
I can't give the mob back the 5 men I shot. Are the cops back there, too? They don't make deals.
Money talks. The dead are dead, but you can deal with
Gloria, it. Gloria, I always figured you a step and a half ahead of the pack. But now you come in on like all the other dumb broads.
You don't stand a chance.
I ain't giving nothing back. You hear? Not one dime.
You don't stand a chance of living out the week.
What do you mean we don't stand a chance of living out the week? We didn't stand a chance of spotting that Cadillac to come riding up in, but we did. You know, we didn't stand a chance of being the same fat-faced accountant I'd recognized, but it was. You see, like not a chance in hell of walking into that room and coming out alive, much less with 300,000. But we did. And now you're talking about we don't have a chance of living out the week. You know that, do you? I mean, no chance at all. Well, I'm rolling. You see, I made my point 10 times today, and I still got the dice, and I'm going to keep on rolling. Yeah, all right. At first, you told me not to try it, you see, but you was wrong, dead wrong. Until 6 o'clock this evening, what was sure for me? I'll tell you what. Prison. Back in the giant again, beating my purse in my hand, you know, outside in some asshole job like a janitor or a porter, you know, cleaning up after some goddamn white man. And you see, that was sure. That was dead sure.
You'd have gotten a job sooner or later.
Look at me, huh? Look at me! You're looking at a 42-year-old ex-con nigger with no schooling, no trade, and a medical problem. Now, who the hell would want me for anything but washing cars or swinging a pick? You gotta get your mind out of that white woman's dream!
There's pain in her face. She has difficulty in fighting back the tears. He turns his back to address his own feelings. When he faces her again, it's with humility and love. But he feels so many uncertainties about himself.
It's gonna be one nothing job after another. You know? You'd be working in that club. Still being propositioned every night. Now, how long would it be before we needed the bread so bad that I'd tell you to do it? Huh?
An array of powerful arc lights illuminate a stretch of murky deep water. A crane slowly pulls up a motor car, a battered black sedan. The rear boot is gaping open, and water gushes from an open door on the driver's side. As the dripping car is hoisted higher, police officers look on with interest. Among them, Lieutenant Pope, who's smoking a cigar and directing operations. The car is gently lowered onto the back of a breakdown truck. Its shackles removed. Police with torches make an initial examination, looking for any clues to the identity of the three men who used the car to steal $300,000 and to gun down 7 people. Photographers take pictures with flash cameras. The driver of the breakdown truck checks that the vehicle is fully secured. Lieutenant Pope is not happy with the uncooperative driver.
$40 tow job. Man, I ain't gonna go on no $40 tow without a written paper from somebody in charge.
Lieutenant Pope removes his glasses and squares up to the breakdown truck driver.
I'm somebody in charge.
I'm taking it down to Precinct Garage, no further.
Lieutenant Pope walks away. He calmly gets into the driving seat of the truck. To the anguish of the truck driver, the detective pulls away with the sedan on the back. At the offices of Johnson's Limousine and Livery Service, Nick DeSalvio plays a card game on his own, sipping coffee, waiting for information to come in. Chevy and other members of Johnson's gang wait in the underground car park, which adjoins the offices.
Hey, Chevy, the guy on the phone says his name is Howard Jello.
Yeah, I know him. The cop with the big mouth.
Chevy.
Hey, man, I hear you've been missing me.
When you coming back uptown?
As soon as I get reassigned. I'm starving to death downtown. I work at headquarters. We got the make on the getaway car. And we got the make on the owners. I hear you pay pretty good for this.
One bill for name of owner.
Well, a bill's better than what I'm doing down here. Mr. and Mrs. Glenn W. Fears.
Glenn W. Fears is in police custody. Captain Mitelli enters the room.
Your name Glenn Fears?
Yeah.
You have a 1966 Checker sedan?
I got rid of that car last week.
You guys have a member killed.
I didn't have nothing to do with that.
Hey, Glenn, you drove that getaway car, didn't you?
No, I didn't drive it.
How did you drove that car?
Oh, you have!
One of the five other cops holds Mr. Fears as Mitelli hits him. Lieutenant Pope comes in.
What the hell are you doing?
This junkie drove the getaway car.
I swear to God, I didn't have nothing to do with that car, man.
Fears.
Pope helps the terrified man to his feet.
You don't have to answer any questions without a lawyer. You're entitled to an attorney.
Come on, get me a lawyer,
and
stick
him
dead on your ass!
Mitelli hits Fears with such force he lands on a table, breaking it.
Look, you can't go around belting.
I'm sick and tired of your liberal bullshit. You better make up your mind. Are you a cop or one of them social workers?
All right, Captain! Go back to 1940! Pull out the powder keg, blow up the whole goddamn community!
Look, the way I work gets results.
I don't hear him saying a goddamn thing.
Fears is on the floor, unconscious. Mitelli leaves in anger and frustration.
Oh, shit.
Now, you didn't tell them nothing, right?
Told me he didn't say a thing.
Mrs. Fears, this is our friend, Nick.
Mrs. Fears, it's a real pleasure to see you here. How do you do?
Now, Mrs. Fears, you know Doc is going to show his gratefulness real good. Now, who did your husband sell the car to?
At the 7-Eleven Club in Harlem, Henry J. Jackson leaves the bedroom with his three female companions. They gyrate to the music along a railed gallery overlooking the smoky bar, which is lit by a chandelier. He's wearing a silk toga and a brightly coloured hat. One of the girls carries his loud check jacket. The club is at its busiest, with drinkers, dancers and diners. Henry J. and party enter the bar through beaded curtains. He's hyper. He pats the bottom of a passing waitress. He takes hold of one of his girls and plants her down on the bar counter. All three appear to drool over him and his money. From the bar counter where she perches, one of the girls fills his glass with champagne. He shares the drink with a blonde whose arms are around his shoulders. Another feeds a cherry into his mouth. Up and behind him on the gallery, DeSalvio has appeared, along with Chevy and other gangsters. Henry J. can't see them watching, but they're taking a special interest in his sudden wealth. The gangsters make their way downstairs and watch some more in the darkness behind the beaded curtains. This is a new direction. Don't think. Suddenly, DeSalvio whips the curtains apart and shouts across to Henry J.
Hey, nigger!
Other revelers look stunned, some outraged.
Is that the man?
Don't make me no nigger, man.
A man stands up from his table. Chevy pulls a gun.
You want your brains all over that wall, brother?
Are you talking to me, white man?
That's right, nigga. I'm talking to you.
Well, I answer to the name of Mr. Jackson. And that's all I answer to.
No shit.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, look at that. Ain't that cute? That's a cutie. That's a beauty.
Uh-huh.
You gotta buy us a couple of snorts, huh? I hear you've been acting like a real big man around here.
Yeah.
Ain't that right, boy?
Who you, boy?
He's a cutie, isn't he a cutie?
DeSalvio rams a drinking glass into his face and grips him tightly around his neck. As Jackson struggles to get free, two of the gangsters grab him again and send him spiraling back. DeSalvio shows no mercy, pounding his fist into the man's head. Chevy looks on calmly. The girl who was looking after Jackson's coat changes allegiances. She hands the coat to Chevy and smiles when she's rewarded with money from one of the men. Chevy searches the coat pockets. He finds a piece of paper with the inscription, Heim's Tailor Shop. DeSalvio, meanwhile, is kicking Jackson, who lies on the floor. Another of the girls who was with him shows loyalty. She starts hitting DeSalvio until he gives her a sharp punch in the face. The force sends her reeling. Others try to break her fall, but she takes them down with her. Jackson is whimpering on the floor.
Get up! Get up, you dirty bastard! Get up!
DeSalvio picks up the man's injured body and throws it down again. He looks with some concern at his hands, stained with Jackson's blood. He sees they're shaking. He glares at another man who's also noticed. He blows on his hands and wipes them with a handkerchief.
Give me my coat, Frank.
His man, Frank, clicks his fingers and DeSalvio's coat appears fast. Frank helps him on with it.
All right, get him out of here. We'll take care of him some more. Get him out of here.
Frank and his sidekick take an arm each and drag the battered and bleeding man away for a further beating. Chevy has the last word.
Anybody here? Seen anything?
Later, an ambulance rushes a brutally beaten Henry J. Jackson to hospital. A doctor is with him, and so are Metelli and Pope.
Tell me
your name, brother. Tell me who done this to you.
Oh, tell me, boy, I'm trying to help you.
He's going to make it, doctor.
No, I'm doing the best I can. Hold that bottle tight. Yeah? Come on, tell me, boy, because I'm trying to help you, boy. Tell me, was it a brother or was it White, yeah?
Help me!
Wait a minute, boy. Tell me. Jim, who? Now, you got it coming, boy. Man, because you're dying. You dumb bastard, I tell you.
Jackson tries painfully and desperately to get off the stretcher. Metelli and the doctor hold him down. Suddenly, he stops trying.
There's no pulse now.
Pope and Metelli look devastated. Doc Johnson is sitting in a high-backed leather chair at his office eating a meal. An angry Captain Metelli is there with a glass of whiskey. Chevy watches on from the background.
No more crucifixions.
My people don't crucify anybody, Frank. Crucifying is wop shit.
Doc, no more crucifixions.
Metelli sips his whiskey. Johnson wipes his mouth with a napkin.
Am I hearing you right? Are you giving me orders?
You're goddamn right, I'm giving you orders.
So much, Chevy.
Who the fuck you?
No, Cap, or I'll blow your brain.
Pope bursts in.
Two against two. That's fair.
You'd be happy, Frank. The last sucker that put his hands on me lost.
Chevy points a gun at Mattelli. Pope points one at him.
Hey. You're new here, ain't you? College boy?
2 years.
Right on, baby. Yeah.
Johnson smiles at Pope, who remains grim-faced. He crosses to Mattelli and looks back at Pope.
I could get you his job.
Mattelli is startled. With a drink in his hand, Johnson sits again at his desk.
Yeah, those are great black boys on the force. How much are we paying this dude, Chevy?
He's the guy that sent back the Christmas present.
Yeah? Well, Mr. Mattelli, don't do that. We've been giving him $2,500 a month for the past 2 years.
Mattelli looks uncomfortable, and he and Pope exchange looks.
He come in here giving me all the shit. He works for me. He works for me same as the whores and the dealers.
I only took gambling money.
Oh, yeah, they all say that. No, you don't take whoring money. You don't take dirty, junky money. You only take nice, clean numbers money. Where do you think it comes from? Little envelopes. Dirty money or clean money, it's all the same. Now get the hell out of here.
Look, I came to give you a message. If you're too dumb to understand, that's your goddamn business. Any more bodies, I'm coming after you. You hear me?
Hey, you watch your motherfucking mouth, white boy. You might be something big to those booty butts that you work over down at the station. But goddammit, this is me. Doc motherfucking Johnson. Come running in here because a couple of your cops got knocked. Especially because one was white. Your friend is a racist son of a bitch. He always has been. They all are. If you're smart, you'll stick with me.
Johnson addresses Pope.
Hey, Chevy. Give him a taste.
Chevy produces banknotes from the inside pocket of his embroidered jacket and counts them. He offers the lot to Lieutenant Pope. Mattelli glances at Pope, wondering what he's going to do.
Hey, boy. Don't waste your career on a force, my boy. Take the money, brother.
You stick it up your ass, brother.
Yeah, well, okay. Go, man, home.
Johnson taps the TV remote control. Mattelli throws a bottle at the screen.
Stand up, you shine bastard. I'll show you how old I am. Go on, pull it. Pull it, you motherfucking Johnson. Go on, pull it.
You're crazy, Mattelli. You don't want to keep on living. You want to die. I'm not going to help you. Hey, boy. Where my hands are. Chevy, show them.
Look, Doc.
Look, so long, Mattelli. It's been nice knowing you.
Captain. Let's go.
As Mattelli leaves, Chevy is at the door and tries to trip him up as a final indignity. Mattelli lays into him. He thumps him repeatedly, exhausting himself before struggling to his feet.
Goddamn clown! Okay, Mr. Pope. Now we can go.
Two uniformed cops call in at the dry cleaner's shop on Joe's shift.
No, I don't bother keeping them clean.
Pride of service.
Some wine will puke on this one by midnight. Hey, did you hear they found some poor bastard crucified?
No.
They think it's one of the three guys who did the hit today.
Well, how the hell did they know who it was?
Fingerprints pegged him. Guy named Jackson. Hey, come on, come on, huh? How much?
$1.07 with tax.
Through the tax, through the buck.
Joe looks anxious as he passes over the counter their clean police uniforms.
Yeah, even cut his balls off.
Wow.
Joe slams the till shut and feels sickened. He shudders when the police officers leave the shop. Captain Mattelli and Lieutenant Pope climb up the stairs of a run-down apartment block, the last known address of Henry J. Jackson.
How'd you like to live in this toilet, Mattelli? I did, Mr. Pope. I did.
Yes?
Mrs. Jackson?
Yes?
We're police officers, Mrs. Jackson.
What?
Police?
A strained looking woman opens the door as wide as the safety chain permits.
Mrs. Henry J. Jackson.
Pope shows his police badge.
We don't have any trouble here.
Can we come in? Please.
She takes the chain off the door and lets them enter. Mattelli switches on a light above a table. She starts removing clutter from the table.
I came to ask about a friend of your husband's. His name is, Jim.
You as Henry J.
You must know somebody named Jim.
Henry J. is at his garage on 137th Street and St. Nick. Now you ask him. I don't know nothing about no Jim.
Mrs. Jackson, are you and your husband separated?
Oh, we haven't been together for a couple of months, but we're not separated.
Mrs. Jackson, I don't know how to tell you this, but your husband is dead. I'm very sorry.
She holds Pope's steady gaze, but looks bewildered. Pope is embarrassed and glances briefly at Mattelli. In a makeshift bedroom in an alcove, a little girl looks from one to the other, wide-eyed.
How'd he die?
The fact is that,
it was an automobile accident. Hit and run.
Mattelli tenderly puts his arm around the little girl who's holding a cuddly toy. Another child is in a bed behind her.
Yes, I know.
She sits slowly down at the table, looking stunned. She starts reading a letter which was lying on the table.
Mrs. Jackson, now about this fellow, Jim, can you tell us anything about him?
She continues to stare at the letter in front of her. Mattelli turns to the child.
You kids have an uncle named Jim, huh?
Hey, listen, the kid doesn't have anything to do with this.
He used to call him Big Fella. Big Fella. I know him. I know him. He said he was over 6 foot, though. Henry J., he called him... His name was Jim Harris. Jim? He used to visit him in jail, even. He's gonna be in there for years and years.
Mrs. Jackson. The coroner's office will be getting in contact with you.
Will they make a fuss when I go downtown? We didn't have no paper. We were common law.
No, they just want you to identify and claim the body, that's all.
No, that won't be necessary. Look, if you have any trouble, just go to the 27th precinct. And as for Frank Mattelli, that's me. You, want me to write it down for you?
No, I can remember. Thank you.
Jim Harris, huh?
The two men pause at the door. Mattelli turns back.
Well, look, this was in your husband's pocket when we found him. I guess it belongs to you now.
He hands her some money. As the detectives leave, she stands at the door looking at the banknotes. She can't fight back the tears any longer. She closes the door. closed sign is placed on the door of the dry cleaner's shop by one of Chevy's gangsters, who exits the shop to stand guard in the dark street. He paces up and down. His aim, to make sure Chevy and two other men inside the shop are not disturbed. Joe Logard is not there, but his boss is. The boss's screams are hidden by the loud music on the radio as he's being tortured. His face is held down tightly on the dry-cleaning steamer. Hot steam is scalding him. Chevy wants information. Time the tortured man slumps helplessly to the floor, Chevy has got what he wants, and he leaves the shop. You know what I am.
His name's Logart. Joe Logart.
With a sack in his hand, Joe Logart trawls along a dingy corridor in a derelict building. He goes through an open metal door and knocks on another door ahead of him.
Jim, it's me. Hey, Jim, you in there? Hey, Jim, it's Joe. Hey, they got Henry J.
Jim Harris cautiously opens the door and indicates that they should talk in the corridor which Joe has just left. A stark strip light in the ceiling lights it.
They castrated his ball.
Jim looks away, sickened by what he's heard. Joe's eyes stay on him, yearning for reassurance.
You take enough?
Joe looks straight ahead, uncertain.
You gotta figure he'd talk.
Maybe.
Well, we always figured if they got one of us, you know?
Yeah. Won't anybody start fucking with my balls, I talk.
The two stand in silence, united in the shared bond of vulnerability and fear.
Hey, I figured they'd be looking hardest in the ghettos, you know. I'm getting out, man. I got a friend in New Jersey who might put me up
for...
Joe puts the sack over his shoulder, studies the face of his partner in crime, and extends his hand. They shake hands.
You okay?
I kind of went to pieces on you up there, didn't I? Hey, thanks for pulling me out of it, man. I just didn't think it'd be that rough.
Forget it, Joe. It's over. We got what we went after, and we're still alive.
I mean, it didn't start hitting me until we started to climb them stairs, man. I mean, everything seems so shaky, you know?
Jim Harris's upper lip starts to quiver.
And those shots, man. Shots. And my legs, Jimbo. My legs feel like the floor started moving from under me, you know?
I said, forget it. It's over and done with.
Yeah, well, whatever happens, man, we're gonna end up rich. Dead, man.
There ain't no better way.
Their eyes lock in sadness and they hug.
You take care, brother.
Jim's lip quivers again. The quiver continues as Joe leaves. At the 27th Precinct, a police clerk in shirt sleeves diligently checks through hundreds of names listed on paper in a giant logbook. Battalion Pope arrive.
Hi, Stunner.
Hey, Captain, how are you?
How you doing?
Me checking the Harrises. Would you believe there are over 300?
300 Jim Harrises? That's the one you come up with.
According to...
Lieutenant Pope.
According to the stuff you told me, I've got it narrowed down to three.
Three.
Here's their pictures. I'm just getting ready now to pull the files.
He hands Metelli a clutch of small photographs. Metelli studies them as he follows the clerk with Pope. Row upon row of files are stored in multi-shelved cabinets.
You know any of these cats?
No, I haven't seen any guy like this.
Thought they might be friends of yours.
No.
Well, they all look alike to me.
Yeah, I thought you'd say that.
B256107.
The filing clerk presses a button. The shelves rotate, revealing more files.
B256107.
He pinpoints a folder and hands it to the captain, but Metelli points to Pope.
Give it to him.
B412378.
N.G. Harris, James Lee Loft, burglary, 3 years Attica. Serving now.
He drops the folder on a shelf. Metelli picks it up and gives it a cursory glance before taking the next file from the clerk.
And then we have B143671.
James Fingers, Harris, alias Harrison. Assault with deadly weapon.
This guy died 3 months ago.
Captain, there's no way of knowing on the books.
Come on, come on, go get the next one. Pope.
James Harris, 42, armed robbery.
Concealed weapons, aggravated assault, larceny by trick. First time on a juvenile charge, attempted hold of candy store, age 12. Jesus Christ. No one run up. Convicted, out on parole. Got epilepsy to boot. Last case handled by Thompson, assistant DA, worked for Doc Johnson.
Who's he?
He could be our man.
What?
I said he could be our man.
Yeah, could be. Okay, run some yellows. Get some pictures.
With his sack over his shoulder, Joe Logoth strides along a dark street. He sees a passing taxi and hails it.
Oh! Port Authority Bus Terminal, 4041st on 8th Avenue. Got you, bus terminal.
As Logart gets in the back, the driver notices the name on the sack, Logart, J. It's followed by a serial number. Through his rear-view mirror, he studies his passenger. Logart lights a cigarette. The driver sees that sweat is glistening on his face. He looks again at the sack on the rear seat. The driver seems indecisive, but then licks his lips and picks up the radio handset.
This is Cab 14 reporting. My last trip tonight. I'm going across 110th Street.
Read me? I'm going across 110th to the Port Authority.
Hey, Sheriff, we've got ourselves a bite. 110th Central Park.
All right, let's go. 110th Central Park.
The prearranged code is picked up on the radio set at Doc Johnson's limousine and livery service. DeSalvio, Chevy and gang set off in two cars to intercept the cab. Meanwhile, Jim Harris is saying an emotional farewell at their apartment to Gloria. She stands looking forlorn in a dressing gown with a towel in her hand. He packs a satchel and includes the machine gun.
You running too?
Hell no, I ain't running. Just that this place ain't too safe anymore. I got me a place all staked out. Nobody will ever find it. It's where I used to live. You know? Where we first
Like, I'll call you. I don't know when, but I'll call you. Okay?
She's close to tears and avoids his gaze. He tightly grips her chin and kisses her on the lips. She buries her head in his chest. Jim strides purposefully through a demolition site. He walks along a gap separating two buildings. The ground is piled high with debris. Most of the tenement blocks in this area are no longer lived in. He climbs an old metal ladder which gives him access to the first floor of one of the empty blocks of apartments. He climbs up the stairs inside. He's aiming for a specific room that he's already prepared. He lights a match in order to locate an oil lamp. He lights the lamp, adding partial illumination to a shadowy and dank room. Joe Logart is sweating profusely in the back of the taxi. The driver halts when the traffic lights turn red at a junction. Two limousines pull up ahead. Logart realizes he's in danger when the cab driver leaps out of the vehicle and runs off. With a growing sense of panic, he sees DeSalvio, Chevy, and the others get out of their cars. He scrambles from the back seat to the driver's seat, revs up the engine and speeds away, scattering the gang as they approach him. One of the gang throws himself onto the bonnet of the taxi to try to stop him. Logart fires his handgun at the windscreen, hitting the man in the chest. The gangsters rush back to their cars to chase after him again. His escape comes to an abrupt stop when the lights go against him at a pedestrian crossing. He's stuck behind a line of traffic. He grabs the sack and abandons the taxi. He runs for his life between the halted traffic, over the road, and through a gap in a metal grill safety fence onto a building site. Seven members of the mob are in hot pursuit on foot. Still gripping the sack, which contains his share of the stolen money, Logart skids to a halt at an opening into a 20-story block under construction. He charges inside. By the time his pursuers reach the tower block, Joe is leaping up the stairs to try to find a place to hide with his loot. The gang splits up. While the others head upwards, DeSalvio examines the ground floor. He discovers a working lift and allows himself a smile. He gets in the lift and presses a button. Logart, now close to the top of the building, hears the lift start up. He heads up another flight of stairs. He races along a corridor of concrete and breeze block. He opens a door, revealing the lift shaft. He sees the lift coming upwards. He goes through another door and closes it behind him. Through a small triangular window in the door, he sees one of the men heading towards the room. The scream comes from Jim Harris, who's having a waking nightmare. He's holed up in the empty tenement block where he once lived. Sweat pours from his face. He's alone with his oil lamp.
My medicine. My pills. Son of a bitch. Dang. My medicine. I gotta find my medicine. My pills. My pills.
Joe Logart is running along a flat roof close to the top of the tower block. There are no side walls. DeSalvio peeps from behind a pillar, a cigarette in his mouth. He got there first. Logart dashes upwards again to the very top of the building. DeSalvio gives a smug smile. His men are closing in, and he knows there's no escape. He glances at the traffic in the streets far below. The vehicles look no bigger than toy cars. With the look of a hunter, DeSalvio climbs the last few steps to the next level. He knows there's nowhere else for his prey to go. But Logart desperately tries to find a refuge on the roof. He runs amid cranes and a variety of building materials, all the time gripping his sack, which he thought contained his future. He sees two gang members approaching him up the final steps. He hurls an empty coiled wire drum down the steps. The men scatter, but they're not stopped, just delayed. Joe starts to run again, not knowing that DeSalvio is waiting. DeSalvio steps out and brings Logart to the floor with a rugby tackle. The others quickly lend support.
Get him up.
Two of DeSalvio's mobsters pin Logart against a steel girder. DeSalvio aims a kick at his face. He searches the man's pockets.
What's this, huh? What's this?
He finds a gun and stuffs it into the pocket of one of his men.
Let's see what else you've got.
As Logart is gripped tightly by his hair, DeSalvio discovers a wad of banknotes in another pocket. He also finds an ID card.
Logart, Joseph, 311 West 141st. Now, let's see what's in the bag, pretty boy. Let's see what's in the bag.
DeSalvio squats down to examine the contents of Logart's sack on the floor. When he sees the money, he stares up at Joe. Then he gives a self-satisfied smile.
You know what we've done to that friend of yours, Henry J. Jackson? You know what we've done to that nigger creep? Huh?
Kiss my ass.
Kiss your ass?
Kiss.
Sure. Who was the other spade witch? Who is the other spade with you, huh? What's his name?
Sammy Davis Jr.
Sammy Davis. Hey, look at this. We got a funny nigga with us. Give me that arm. Yeah. Okay, nigga. Let's see you laugh. Ah! Ah! Huh? You laughing? Huh? Come on. I want to talk to you. You're not talking, are you? Hey, you want to see a pretty picture? You want to see a pretty scene, huh? You want to see some pretty scenery? Take him over here. Come here.
Joe is dragged to the edge of the roof. 20 floors below, traffic fills the roads. The headlights look like pinpricks. It's a long way down.
Put him over here. That's it. Stay right there. Stay right there. Now, who was it? Tell me who it was. You think I get any kicks out of wiping you out? Now, look at me. You see any horns up here? They're no horns. We're not animals. Tie his legs good. We're trying to be friends. That's all. If you don't tell me who it was, you're going to make me do something that I don't like. You're going to make me feel very bad. Do you hear me? You're going to make me feel very bad. You're not going to tell me, huh? You're not going to tell me? Look at that. Can you fly? Huh?
Yeah. Look at that.
Why should you take a drive down 20 stories when we're going to find out anyway? We're going to find out. We found out Henry J., didn't we? We found you here, didn't we? Who was it, Joey? You dropped.
Logart's legs are tied with rope. The other end is tossed over a steel girder. Logart is suspended over the edge upside down.
Hey, come here. No. It's all right. Just tell me, baby. Everything will be all right if you just tell me. That's all right. Just tell me. Who was it? Who?
Who? Harris? Jim Harris? All right, sweetheart. All right. All right.
Jim Harris.
Logart is swinging upside down above New York. DeSalvio gives the signal for him to be dropped. Jim Harris makes a call from a payphone.
Hello?
My medicine. Where the hell did I put my pills?
I remember. Go back to the room. I'm coming.
Gloria rushes into the street. She's being watched by the mob.
There goes Harris's bride. She's going to take us right to him.
They follow her in their car. Harris is crawling along the floor in pain in his hideout. She pushes pills into his mouth and caresses him.
I'm never going to leave you alone again.
Right there.
637 Lenox Avenue. He's holed up on the fifth floor of an empty tenement.
Uh-huh. The girl still in there?
Right.
Lucky son of a bitch.
Metelli arrives at the 27th precinct.
Hey, Pope.
Can I see a second?
18 football.
Come on, will you? It's been a long goddamn night. Pope, I want to talk to you. Look, I want you to... understand? You want a drink?
No, I don't drink.
You will, Pope. You will.
Metelli takes a slug of whiskey in his office.
Monday, I'll give you all the facts. Names and figures. I just don't...
Wait a minute, why?
'Cause I'm 55. Put in 33 years and... it's time to quit. Pope, I want to retire. And I don't want you to use anything you heard of.
No, I want you to stop patronizing me.
What the hell are you talking about?
Lieutenant Pope punches the wall in anger.
Well, you really are a racist son of a bitch, aren't you, Metelli?
Will you cut out that racist crap?
Because I'm black. I'm going to blow the whistle on you, is that it?
You want my job, don't you?
Yes! Not like that, Metelli. I want it on my terms.
I just thought that...
When are you going to start looking at me as a cop?
Metelli, hey, Paul. Hold it. For you.
Pope is about to leave. He returns to take the phone call.
Pope here.
If you use this right, what I'm going to tell you, you can be detective first grade in a month.
You've got 5 seconds. Say it.
Move fast and you can get Harris. He's holed up in the fifth floor of the empty tenement, 637 Lenox Avenue.
He signaled for Metelli to pick up the extension.
That son of a bitch is trying to suck us into something.
He's telling you you're in and I'm out. Pope. The bill comes later.
Screw him. I won't pay it.
Pedro, Jeffrey, Brooke, let's go! Now, Harris is holed up in an apartment at 637 Lenox Avenue.
I guess that's TPF. That's right. I want you to get out the flak vest, the sharpshooter, tag ass, the whole goddamn thing. Now, come on, let's go.
He turns back to Metelli, who's drinking another whiskey.
Captain, are you coming?
Metelli, a cup of whiskey to his mouth, looks surprised to be asked. He sets off after Pope. Jim Harris is lying on a bed, a blanket over him. He wakes up to see Gloria blow out the oil lamp as dawn seeps through a curtainless window in the derelict apartment. Gloria pops tablets into a cup and pours in soup from a tin warming in a saucepan of hot water. Another window behind Harris's head is boarded up. His machine gun is propped against it. Gloria sits beside the bed, the cup and a spoon in her hand. She sees his eyes have closed again. She kisses him on the cheek.
Dead men hate soup. Need love.
No.
I'll keep in touch.
Chevy lights Doc Johnson's cigar with a gold cigarette lighter.
Save your dime. I'm going to bed. I already know how it's gonna turn out.
Outside the derelict tenement block, one of the gangsters keeps watch on the apartment where Harris is hiding. Inside, Harris seems better and has put his coat on.
We are going to make it, ain't we?
Gloria rests her hand affectionately on Harris's shoulder.
We're going to make it.
Jim, if we only could.
Well.
Maybe we still can.
Yeah.
They hug warmly. In an alleyway at the side of the block, DeSalvio makes his way through the debris with two men. They climb a loose metal fire escape to reach an opening on the first floor of the apartment block. DeSalvio, in a smart suit and light overcoat, brushes his hands together to rid them of rust from the fire escape. The three make their way up the stairs in a damp stairwell where the paint has peeled off the crumbling walls. DeSalvio smiles when he hears voices. He gestures for his men to stay still.
Okay.
Still smiling, DeSalvio takes out his gun and leads the other two quietly up a further flight of stairs.
I'm gonna find us a place somewhere high up in the mountains. Near a stream of water. Maybe a lake. And then I'm gonna cut my own logs and build us a little hut.
Baby turtles? I've always wanted a pet turtle. I'll grow carrots in my garden.
What?
Carrots in my garden for me.
All right, Harris, this is the police. Come out with your hands up. There won't be any trouble.
Harris springs into action, blasting back with his machine gun through the closed door. One of DeSalvio's men is hit. Gloria also takes a bullet.
You got 3 seconds. One. Two. Three.
In a frenzy of rage, Harris rushes through the door, firing continuously. DeSalvio crashes against a window on the stairway, shattering the glass. He covers his face with his hands as Harris finishes him off. DeSalvio lies dead, covered in blood. The third gangster is out of the building, galloping to the waiting car. The driver is standing beside the vehicle. Harris is in pursuit. He shoots the man before he can open the car door. The driver tries to escape. Harris fires at him. The car goes out of control and turns over. The driver tries to get out. Harris fires again and the vehicle is engulfed in flames. The driver falls from the car, burning like a human torch. The car explodes. Ah! As the police cars start to arrive, their emergency lights flashing, Harris turns on his heels. Still gripping the machine gun, he scrambles over the rubble and debris in the alleyway at the side of the tenement buildings. He pulls himself up the loose-fitting fire escape and leaps through a glassless window. The street outside is filling with police vehicles. Metalli and Pope emerge from one of them, and they lead a squad of running men past the blazing car and along the alleyway towards the apartment block. They enter through the same window that Harris used. Harris has made his way to the room where Gloria's dead body is slumped against a wall. He looks and turns his head to one side to sob. His chin is cushioned on a satchel that hangs from the wall, the satchel containing the money that was to give he and Gloria a new life. Overcome with grief, he places the strap of the satchel over his shoulder, picks up the machine gun, and exits onto the fire escape. He climbs upwards onto a flat roof. Inside the building, the police race up the stairs to the room Harris has left. They pass the bloody body of DeSalvio. Harris is climbing to a higher building. He glances down and sees more police on the ground far below. Lieutenant Pope is in the room Harris left. He sees the body of Gloria, and he looks sickened. Police are swamping the area, some climbing the fire escapes. Inside, holding his gun, Captain Metelli is heading upwards on the staircase. Pope and Metelli have reached one of the flat roofs. Other officers are immediately behind them. From a level above them, Harris opens fire. Metelli grabs Pope around the neck, dragging him to the floor for protection. Before police can return fire, two detectives are shot dead. As more uniformed men arrive on the roof, Harris runs to find another vantage point. He's reloading behind a wall close to the edge when a uniformed cop grabs him. The two men grapple. Harris has powered up the machine gun and shot the officer at point-blank range. The force sent the man somersaulting over the waist-high wall to the street below. Harris dashes along another flat rooftop. He's about to open an access door to the inside stairs when a policeman comes through the door. He rams the door into the officer and starts climbing again to a higher adjoining building. He's spotted by a group of police officers who open fire. He fires back, hitting at least one of them. Meanwhile, nobody has noticed Chevy and one of his gang climbing up an outside ladder at an adjoining block. The police are closing in on Harris. A bullet ricochets off a brick wall close to a set of steps Harris is climbing to get even higher. When he reaches the top of the steps, a police marksman gets lucky. Harris winces with pain and goes down. Close by, Chevy and his accomplices are on a rooftop. They take cover behind a wall. Through an exit door, police swarm onto the rooftop immediately below where Harris lies. They don't know if he's dead or just injured. They prop a stepladder against a wall to reach him. As a policeman is very close to the top of the ladder, Harris struggles to his feet and shoves the ladder away, sending the policeman flying. From a parable building in the distance, a police marksman with a rifle has Harris in his sights. He's shot three times altogether. He writhes on the floor.
Keep your cover and hold your fire.
As the police cautiously hold back, Harris crawls painfully on all fours, dragging his satchel and machine gun with him, past a pigeon loft to the other edge of the rooftop, which overlooks a school playground. The ball games and the skipping ceases as the children stare up in shock. Harris swings the satchel round and tosses it with the money inside into the playground. The children scramble round the bag and its contents like bees round a honeypot. Harris watches the youngsters. Captain Metelli is climbing up at the other side of the roof. He doesn't immediately see that Harris has turned and is staggering towards him with the machine gun. Lieutenant Pope sees him.
get down! Get down!
Metalli sinks to the floor of the flat roof, dropping his gun. Before Harris can fire, Pope shoots him. Harris goes down and doesn't get up again this time. Metalli remains on the floor in shock. He slowly gets to his feet as other officers flock to make sure it really is all over. On the adjoining building, Chevy skulks behind a wall, fitting a silencer to his gun. Pope partially turns the body of Jim Harris to make absolutely sure he's dead. He satisfies himself that there's no sign of life. He and Metalli look emotionally exhausted. Chevy takes aim. There's a look of horror on Metalli's face. His hand locks with Pope's hand as he slowly crumbles to the floor. Blood is flowing from a bullet wound in Metalli's right temple. The black hand continues to grip the white hand until the end.